Welcome to the Incession Film Podcast for December 1st, 2013. This is episode 41, and I'm J.D. Duran.
And I'm Scott Pollard.
And I am Blake Pertuzet.
Welcome back, Blake. Second time in 3 weeks. Glad to have you back on the show this week.
I'm glad to be back again here. I enjoyed that the first time here. Hopefully, we're a little bit more material than I'm used to this time here. So yeah. I was actually looking forward to this one, so I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. Glad to have you back on the show. And this week on the Incession Film Podcast, we're going to be reviewing the remake of Old Boy and going off of that, because this is exactly what I think of the movie. We're going to be doing our top three unnecessary remakes. And then in our third segment, we're going to discuss the Independent Spirit Award nominations that was just released over the last week. And then we're going to talk about some of the latest movie news and films we got to see over the last week. But before we get into it, how's your guys' Thanksgiving week?
Well, it was, we were talking about earlier, you know, stressful and awkward as they usually are. You know, you drive 3 hours to sit there for 2 hours and then drive 3 hours back and then miss out.
Did you have to travel anywhere?
Yeah, I live up in Ohio, so it's about a three-hour drive to where I'm from. Yeah. So it's not too bad. It's a nice drive anyway. But to get up and drive up there and then have to try to get back here before it gets dark and everything now, because it happens at 5 o'clock, I think, you know, that's the most wonderful time of the year. So,
absolutely.
But otherwise, you know, it was good. You know, ate too much, and you know, that's the whole point of it.
Oh, absolutely. What about you, Scott?
Like I said earlier, I probably gained 5 pounds this weekend, but, it was a normal Thanksgiving for me. I enjoyed a lot of football, a lot of movies, a lot of beer. So what about you, man?
I had a pretty wonderful week. I didn't get to see as many movies because there was a lot going on with family stuff, and I went back to Michigan this week because that's where I'm from. And I haven't seen my family in a long time, so it was good to see them again. But, you know, I've kind of discussed on the show that a big family tradition for us is we wake up kind of early, and we have, like, a big lunch. So we have all the traditional Thanksgiving stuff, but we just do it at lunchtime. And usually we watch the Lions lose. But this time around, it was a little bit different. And so it was very nice to finally see my Lions get a victory on Thanksgiving. And I'm not kidding when I say it's the first time in 10 years that they've won on Thanksgiving.
Wow.
So,
it's been a while.
Which was awesome. And then the next day, or on Saturday, I did not expect my Michigan Wolverines to even come close to beating Ohio State. So the fact that we only lost by 1 point, I'm okay with that. More than happy to lose to Ohio State by 1 point. And usually I hate saying that, but after this year, I'll take it. That was a big victory for us, really.
Oh, absolutely. You earned that one, except for, like we talked about, just one bad play call ruined that great game for you guys.
Yeah, great play calling all game until the very last one, but I'll take it. I understand it's a good win for Ohio State. It is actually a good loss for us. I'll take that any day of the week.
This is truly like a universal podcast. We're bringing together Ohio State fans and Michigan.
I know, really. Imagine that. And he's even wearing a Michigan sweatshirt. I have yet to punch him.
I know. Hey, I'm proud of my fellas. We did good. I'm proud of the heart that we played with, because we haven't played like that all season long. So I'll take that. But anyway, we have some good stuff to talk about on the show. One quick thing, though, before we get started, I just want to say tragic news about Paul Walker happening over the weekend on Saturday. We're going to talk about this a little bit more later in the show, but rest in peace, Paul Walker. Regardless whether you like him or hate him, people, after what I saw on Twitter, a lot of people tend to love him even as a person. So very sad to hear about that. But yeah, like I said, we'll talk about more about that later in the show. For now, let's get into it.
And here we go.
Thank you. You're listening to the Incession Film Podcast. This is episode 41. All right, Scott. So if you're kidnapped and forced to eat nothing but dumplings for 20 years, and then you're released, would you go back and eat dumplings again on your own to find the kidnappers? Would you be willing to do that?
I'd probably never eat dumplings again, period. Either I'd find another way or something. Never a dumpling. No.
You read them? You read my letters? You had them right. Who are you?
Your friend Chucky called me because you were in really bad shape.
Well, I'm all right now, so I can get out of here.
No, you're far from all right.
What are you doing here?
I apologize for reading your letters.
You didn't call the police?
No, I didn't.
Why?
I believe you.
Why?
I believe that you've been locked up for a long time.
Don't touch me. What if I thought you knew too much, huh? Reading my letters. What if I felt like I needed to kill you right now?
Then I suppose I'd be dead.
All right, Old Boy is directed by Spike Lee and stars Josh Brolin, Elizabeth Olsen, Samuel L. Jackson, Chartel Copley, and a few other people as well. I guess before we get into it, though, fellas, this is a remake of a 2003 Korean film. So I guess for context, the first thing I want to ask you is, have you seen the original, and do you like the original movie?
I have. I've seen it a couple times. I actually rewatched it this past week before I went to see the remake of it, just to make sure it was kind of fresh in my mind to compare the two anyway. Yeah, yeah. I'm not always a big foreign films fan. It's not that I'm opposed to, there are so many people that are silly and just don't like reading subtitles, but that's not the problem. I love films like that. I thought that it was an incredible emotional movie. And of course, I've got a few friends who I've talked to about it as well. Actually, a friend of mine asked me last week if I had seen the original, and he wanted no part of it. You know, like the storyline in that movie is just not ready for it here.
Sure.
And some people are like that. I thought that it was really a journey on that man's part, you know, a descent into madness, basically. Of course, we'll get into that later on with it, but I'm definitely a big fan of the original film.
All right, what about you, Scott?
Yeah, you know, I'd seen the original a long time ago. I did watch it again last year. I'm a big fan of Park Chan-wook, of course. He had Stoker earlier this year, and it's making a lot of top 10 lists. But as far as Old Boy goes, you know, yeah, I did like it a lot. I didn't love it as much as the people who had told me to watch it. So maybe I'm not the biggest fan of it. I like it. It's a great movie, but I don't love it. You know, it's not like one of my favorite of all time or anything like that. And also, I wanted to say that as far as remakes go in general, I tend to be on the sympathetic side or empathetic side when it comes to foreign remakes, just because I feel like a lot of people, like my dad, for instance, don't like foreign films, you know, for whatever reason. So, you know, I tend to try to I give them a pass on the remakes for the foreign films as opposed to domestic, you know, English spoken version. Anyway, yeah, with that said, what about you? Have you seen the old one?
Yes, I have seen the original a few different times, and I am a huge fan of it as well. I really liked it. I would agree, though, that this film is not for everybody. I mean, it's definitely dark and depressing, and it hits a lot of interesting beats. So yeah, it's definitely one that I could see a lot of people liking or even hating, but it's definitely has become a cult classic, especially for a Korean film over the last decade or so, I guess. And but yeah, I mean, I really like it quite a bit. So I'm not sure what kind of expectations I had going into this one, but I knew that I did love the original one, so I wasn't exactly sure what to expect. Now, I do like Josh Brolin, and I like Spike Lee for the most part, so I liked the players involved, but wasn't exactly sure how this was going to pan out given those facts. So that being said, what did you guys think about the 2013 version of Old Boy?
Well, I had some high expectations going into it. Again, I like most of the players involved the same way you said there. I'm not a huge Spike Lee fan. I do like Josh Brolin a lot. I was surprised when they cast him instead. Originally, Daniel Craig was an actor that they had looked at for that movie.
And Will Smith.
After seeing this new version of it, as much as I love Daniel Craig and Will Smith, I'm thankful they did not take part in it. I honestly, there's not a whole lot about this version that I liked. And it might be that I liked the original version that much. that I had high expectations for it, but it felt really flat to me. The amount of emotion that was involved in the original version. I like Josh Brolin, but he's not that great of a dramatic actor. And with some of the things in this movie here that you have to really play up, it didn't work out for me. And some of the changes they made for being the American version, for making it a bit easier on the American audience than the Korean film was, there's not a whole lot I liked about it.
Yeah, I going into it, I had extremely low expectations because of the trailers that I'd seen. And just as far as this story goes, I wasn't sure that it would translate to American audiences very well. And especially with Spike Lee at the helm, it just seemed like a confusing thing to me. So I went into it thinking, honestly, I wouldn't even like it at all. But I ended up thinking that it was okay. I don't think it's a great movie. I think it's along the lines of Riddick, what we saw earlier this year, where you go in there and, you know, you can enjoy it. If you don't know the story, I feel like you could probably enjoy it. But it's nothing that I'm going to remember in a couple months or anything. And I definitely think the Korean version is better. But I did think there were a lot of bright spots. I thought that Elizabeth Olsen did a fairly good job of being a lead female, which I'd been looking forward to because I really like her and she hadn't been in a whole lot lately. So I was kind of getting afraid she might be getting lost, you know, in B list or something like that. But I did enjoy a lot of things that were tributes or homages to the first film, to the original. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of cool. And I don't know, Josh Brolin, I'm not a big fan of either. I mean, he did okay. You know, I just didn't think he was anything spectacular. Let's put it that way. What did you think about it, JD?
Well, for me, the first thing that I want to say is there needs to be a big asterisk next to this movie, at least for me. And here's the reason why. Spike Lee's version of this movie is 140 minutes. The studios, though, had a lot of post-production issues with this movie, and they cut it down from 140 to 105 minutes. Now, the movie doesn't necessarily have to be 140. I get that, especially for American audiences. They have a hard time going past 120. But I agree a lot with what you guys are saying, and a lot of this movie is very undeveloped, and it falls flat, a lot like Blake was saying, a lot like what you're saying, Scott. And I want to know if that 35 minutes that they cut out, if it brought anything more to life for this movie than what we see in the cut we saw on film or on the screen, because a lot of the character stuff feels rushed to me. A lot of the story, especially in the second act of the film, and even some of the stuff in the third act feels very rushed to me. We get a lot more at the beginning than we do in the original too, you know, with him, with the backstory and him being drunk and just kind of walking around. And I don't know if all of that was necessary. So I'd kind of like to see the director's cut of this before really giving it a final thought on it. But given what we have to deal with and given what we saw on screen, this movie just felt very messy and it just felt very contrived, even more so than the original. And going back to what you guys were saying about Josh Brolin, to me was fine, and I think he was okay. But there's a lot of layers to someone that goes through what this character goes through, and he's pretty straightforward. And we only get kind of one little layer from Josh Brolin's character. And even though there's the revenge elements to this character, to me, and especially what I saw in the original, there's layers of fear and these layers of urgency because of the situation he's having to deal with. And those are powerful motivators. And we don't get any of that from Josh Brolin's character. So to me, it just felt like it was just very messy and on the surface. And I didn't really care for that.
Right. I didn't really see much of any emotion out of him at all, other than the revenge aspect. I mean, there in the original version, there's a love story to be had there, no matter how off base it might be. But, the extra backstory in the beginning, I didn't mind so much because it helped you really place his character and you could understand bit more like why this guy is a complete tool and somebody might want to lock him up for 20 years. You know, that it builds that you kind of don't like his character to begin with because the way he acts. But as again, like you get into the second and third act, there's so much that's left untouched and things that are not explained enough. And I think it banks too heavily on people having seen the original and saying, oh, here's just an American version that I don't have to read subtitles on. That's what it feels like to me. Like you said, it's very rushed. he comes out of there, and of course, where the revenge aspect, the action sequences where he's fighting people, even like the first scene in the soccer field or whatever. There's no real explanation as far as why he's able to be that kind of a physical threat at this point.
Yeah.
There's like one little clip of him like punching the wall and stuff, and then he's in there. Compared to the original version, where the character actually says, "Would it be possible for a man to learn to fight like this just from watching it on TV and practicing on his own?" They explain it a bit more, and that's only one little thing that has that aspect to it. But again, it's just very rushed, and I totally agree with that.
Yeah, I feel like it's hard to for me to really make a decision upon. Like, it's hard for me to know whether my dad will enjoy this film or not, knowing that he has never seen, or I'm just talking about anybody who has never seen the old one and going into this new one. I'm trying to think, you know, how are they like it? It's so hard to like unknow what you already know when you're thinking about a remake. You know what I mean? Like, it's in the back of your mind, you know what's going to happen. So whether or not they're hitting the things necessary to make it, I don't know, accessible, is hard to know. I do agree with you, JD, about the cut, though. I mean, I think a lot of things felt rushed. You know, I think that a lot of the character development seems missing to me, especially the side characters, you know, especially the supporting cast. I mean,
And I think that's an important note to hit on, because, you know, I went and saw this with my sister and her boyfriend who have never seen the original. And I feel like for people that haven't seen this, and I think it's important for us as fans who have seen it to kind of step outside of that, you know, kind of like what you're saying, Scott. And to me, I feel like if I hadn't seen the original, I would just be so lost and confused and not really sure what's going on, because nothing has developed. And we're dealing with a story that is very dark and depressing. And there's a lot of layers to the stuff that's going on, especially with the twist and stuff that's happening at the end of the film. And I agree with you, Blake. I feel like a lot of the stuff in the hotel room, while I like the aesthetic, I thought the aesthetic was really done well. But outside of a few moments, we don't really get to, it's hard for me to buy into the character that he eventually becomes. You know what I mean? And so I feel like as the story starts to progress, it's hard for me to get past anything other than the surface level that this character is portraying. And it just, it takes the believability out of it for me, at least comparatively to the original.
Right. It seems that the way this is done is that the whole hotel sequence in this movie is just a way to show you that time is passing.
Yeah.
And there's not much that it seems changes. He's eating the dumplings every day, and you see historical things through presidential inaugurations and whatnot, but there's not really much else.
I think the one thing about that, though, and maybe you guys can touch on this too, but I did like the updatedness of that, though. With everything with 9/11 and the thing in New Orleans and all that sort of stuff. I thought all of that was kind of cool, though.
Right. Also, I thought that the technology being integrated into it was really cool, like him using the computer and the phone, you know, having a part to do with like how he finds out, you know, things. I don't know. I liked all that a lot. It was kind of cool.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I was just going to touch on that same exact thing right there, how that's a nice version for the update here.
Yeah.
Learning how to Google things.
Yeah, that was pretty good. Yeah, because he's like, so what do I just, search right there and just start typing? Yeah.
Although somehow the very first time he uses his iPhone, he knows how to slide. To unlock it and use it.
My sister said that same thing. She's like, how does he know how to answer the phone?
That's such a cool thing, though, to put in a film that has nothing to do with that kind of stuff, like how much happens in 20 years. It was a cool – when he first gets the phone out of the bag with the money, it was kind of a cool moment, because he was like, okay, I know what this does something, but I'm not really sure what.
For sure. But I feel like those are the – I don't know what their motivations for doing this remake are, but I feel like those are the only things that really make this unique comparatively to the original. And I'm not sure if they were trying to do something different or trying to do something new, but there's not really a whole lot of stuff here that's new or different. If anything, it's the same thing, but not done as well. But it only adds those little 2013 touches to it, which make it kind of fun. I don't know. Maybe you guys feel differently, but that's pretty much what I got out of it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that if anything, that it was just someone's who was a big fan of the original movie wanted to make an American version so more people could share that. Maybe because, like you said, it's kind of the same thing done over. A few things are a little different in there. But my problem is, I think that what they did differently, they did totally wrong.
Yeah, and you know, one of those things for me was, you know, like the hallway scene or the fight with the hammer. to me, that scene was – it's one of the bigger moments of the first film. Mm-hmm. And we get into it here, and the whole thing seems ridiculously contrived, way more fake than the original. And it's a crazy situation to begin with. I understand that. But the way that what we see here, it just, it felt like I was on set. Like, it didn't feel like I was watching a movie. Like, I felt like I was watching a behind the scenes with Josh Brolin with this hammer, just kind of knocking people down. And to me, that's supposed to be a big moment and something you feel and something you get on involved with the character. And, you know, another way to put it is in a movie that is dark and depressing like this one, the original still had fun elements to it, where this one was just arduous to watch all the way through.
And here's the thing about that hammer scene. I thought you, when I was watching it, I was like, well, you might as well just give him Thor's hammer, because this is so over the top that it's, you know, it's kind of becoming ridiculous. Where I just think Spike Lee thought it in his head. I feel like he thought, well, I have to include this part of the movie because it was so awesome in the Korean version.
Yeah.
But he couldn't do it right. I felt like it was totally terribly done. I don't know. I agree. Just felt like so flat, like you guys said.
And another thing that I heard, I don't know how much of this is true, but I think this also goes back to my original point with the studios cutting the film, because I heard that there was a big chunk of this scene that was cut, which could play into the reason why we feel that. And another side element to that is the score, because the score in the original movie is really good, and especially for this scene, it's absolutely outstanding and adds a whole different layer to the mix, where the score here is extremely boring, very laid back, and you hardly notice it at all. So I think those two elements play major roles into that as well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. It's just, it's way too long and way over the top, and I think they just wanted to have another long action sequence here. And the thing that bothers me about it is that in the original, a lot of things they did, a lot of the more graphic, violent type scenes were mostly off screen.
Yeah.
And it carried a bit more weight to me in that way here. And here, it seems like we're just using an excuse to make it another like version of Hostel or something like that. You
really
know, just,
violent.
Let's get some more just torture porn in there, basically, for no real reason.
I just had a couple things to say real quick, just to ask you guys if you had this reaction.
Okay.
All right, so first of all, we got some footage in here. This is not spoiler at all, but we got some footage of Elizabeth Olsen as a young person, and it was really her real life home video, which I thought was kind of cool. I don't know if you guys...
I didn't know that was actually her real photos.
No.
Yeah, you know, he had Mary-Kate and Ashley in one of those videos they showed. I thought that was kind of cool.
I didn't really notice that, but that's interesting.
I didn't catch that.
Also,
it's kind of funny, though.
I mean, it has nothing to do with it. But also, one more thing has nothing to do with the spoiling it, but I loved how he stared at the octopus in the aquarium.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
that was
great.
I
loved
that too.
Well,
it was a good little touch, yeah.
He handled that well.
The in the beginning sequence when he was buying the toy for his daughter, the girl that was at the counter there had the wings on.
Oh, yeah.
That he had bought the wings for in the original one. Yeah. She was wearing the wings and she was doing the little shoulder movement there and like, like she was trying to fly. Yeah.
So it was nice that there was those little touches and moments to the original for sure.
One last thing. Would you guys rather have had the original ending redone, or did you like it in a different ending?
You know, this is something that we can discuss in our bonus content that we'll do for this week when we do spoilers. To me, this was the best part of the remake to me, because it was something new, it was something different, and I feel like it was much more fitting for a Spike Lee film, and I thought it was much more fitting for an American audience.
Totally agree.
Who really struggle with ambiguous endings like what we get in the original, which I loved, by the way. But I feel like this one fit the tone of this movie, especially with what they were doing and the whole reason they were remaking it. I thought it was very appropriate.
Well, I can see both sides to that. Of course, we'll touch on it more later on, but I think this the way it's kind of almost an exact opposite ending from the original film.
Oh, yeah.
And that's, in a way, what bothers me a bit as far as, you know, loving the original, but I do agree that it's much more fitting for a American audience.
Yeah.
I will agree with that.
Also, we should say that Spike Lee himself said that he has no idea why Park Chan-wook let him remake it. He said he would never let anyone remake any of his movies.
For sure.
That was interesting.
Yeah, and he's been public. Him and Josh Brolin, though, have come out publicly saying that they are not fans of this version of it. And he even took out his patented, you know, Spike Lee joint that he has and just did the more impersonal Spike Lee film or whatever.
Oh, wow.
So I know that was another touch too. Like he's not a huge fan of this movie himself. So, one other thing I wanted to ask you guys about is getting into the script and the story here a little bit, which a lot of this movie kind of touches on a lot of the same beats that we get in the original one. Now, this is going to be kind of difficult to get into without getting into spoilers, but I still want to bring it up because there's a moment where we see Elizabeth Olsen and Josh Brolin's characters kind of together. They've been kind of trying to figure out this mystery a little bit, the two of them. And as some of that stuff starts to unravel a little bit and we get some more intimate moments between the two of them, how or what did you guys think about that and how that was played out?
Well, that's kind of a tough question in a way on that. I mean, and I'm trying to kind of step out of the box here a little bit, but going back to the original, there was a lot of exposition later on in the film about why things happened that way and how they got together that way. And I don't think that in this version they really – it just kind of happens. And I don't really see the development of it a whole lot. I mean, sure, she's a an empathetic character towards him and trying to help him out. But, to what extent, for what reason? He's a complete stranger, in the beginning there. And I don't know. Again, I might – and then again, that's going back to the director's cut. There may be a lot more in that. So I don't want to totally, be negative towards it right now. But in this version of it here, from what I've seen at this point, what we're talking about – I don't really kind of get how it comes together.
What about you, Scott?
Yeah, I thought that the big difference between the other one and this one was that in this one, I felt like the director didn't really respect the audience as much. I felt like he made it really clear from the beginning of their relationship that there was going to be something there. I felt like you knew they had some kind of connection, whereas in the Korean one, you didn't really know what was going to happen between those two people. I felt like it was took a little more time to develop, and I don't know. It just felt kind of lazily done here to me. What about you?
To me, it's already a little bit of a contrived situation given the script and the storylines it goes. But to me, in the original one, it felt a lot more natural, where this one just was really forced, kind of like what you're saying. The first time we see them together, you already know what's going to happen. Now, the sex scene that we see is critical to the story, and I don't think it's surprising at all. I was talking to some other friends earlier who thought that it was kind of, lackadaisical in the way that it was shot. I thought it was okay.
I thought it was absolutely marvelous.
I thought it was done really good too. And the nudity didn't bother me at all either. I think it was more rushed than anything. I was okay with the way it was shot. It just needed to be paced differently.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But it's all coming back to where you kind of know what's coming at that point. Again, it's just too. There's no real foreshadowing or anything that's slightly done, in that way. I don't know really much else to say about it here. I wasn't a fan of the relationship.
I will say that I did like that she was like some type of, volunteer health person. That was kind of a good way to get her into the picture.
Yeah.
That was kind of cool.
I was perfectly fine with that. And I loved Elizabeth Olsen's performance here. I think you kind of touched on it earlier, Scott. But I thought she was very good here. I think she was probably the best. She doesn't have a whole lot to work with, though, and we don't really see her a ton. I just wish that she would have had a little bit more to do. And maybe that's the reason part of the dynamics and the chemistry between the two don't feel as natural, because we don't really see it more. It's not as fluid, and she's not on screen enough for all of that to develop well. But I think given what she had to work with, I thought she did a great job.
She has a unique kind of talent, too. I don't know if you guys thought about this before, but to me, she reminds me of Maggie Gyllenhaal a lot, in that she's very, she's just her own kind of actress, There's nobody else like her. She's kind of – I'm anxious to see what she can do in the future.
Yeah, I will definitely agree with that. I think that as far as the dramatic acting of this movie goes, she was the best part of it. The only one really that wasn't just overplayed. Like we talked about Josh Brolin's character, Sholto Copley's character was just – through the roof. He reminded me of a 60s Batman villain at some points. The way he did it, I couldn't tell if I was watching Frank Gorshin, at that point. The one thing that I find most interesting about this movie with Elizabeth Olsen is that she said she hadn't seen the ending of the film until the red carpet premiere of it.
Oh, wow.
Until she actually saw the whole full movie of it, she didn't know the ending, which in a way kind of bothers me, because did you not watch the original when you know you're doing a remake?
Yeah.
That's kind of part of, being ready for a role. I would think that you would at least watch the original version if you know that. I don't know. Maybe Spike Lee didn't tell her because he was embarrassed of it himself.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know. But that's on IMDb. That's where I read that fact. I was doing a little, after the fact, reading some stuff about it. And then she actually said she hadn't seen it until then. that kind of bothers me in a way, but she still did very well with it. Maybe if she had seen it, then she wouldn't have been as good in that movie. I don't know. Maybe it would have detracted her a bit. I don't know, but she still was probably one of the better shining parts to me.
And just for clarity, for my sake, are you, when you're talking about Elizabeth Olsen, are you referring to the final ending sequence or like the final twist with her character toward the end?
No, the final, just the ending, the final ending of the movie. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, even the twist and that,
and
it seems like, yeah.
Okay.
Because in this version here, then there wasn't a whole lot that she had to do in that scene afterwards.
Sure.
You know, compared to the original. Yeah. And of course, there's the ending, you know, sub-ending, whatever you want to call it, from the original as well, that I don't think that she was aware of any of that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, something that you brought up that I wanted to ask you, Scott, then, since you just touched on it, Blake, was Charlton Copley's character. What did you think about that, Scott?
I thought the same. I agree with Blake. You know, it seemed kind of, I don't know. I just feel like all these characters, whether it's because Spike Lee's cut got changed or whatever, it feels very disrespectful to the audience. And it feels like, you know, they think you're an idiot and they have to spell it out for you clearly for you to understand that, like, who they are. Because he was like a Resident Evil villain or something, somebody on a video game. Yeah. I don't know. It's so simple.
Well, I liked it, and here's the reason why. I think it's very easy to feel that way, Scott, and most of the people that I've talked to about this film that's seen it has said pretty much the same thing. It does feel a little cartoony. I would agree with that. But the reason I liked it is because when we look at the story of what's going on with his family, and they do change a couple different things that we'll get into in the spoilers, but given those changes – and given the family dynamics that his family had, there was abusing that was going on that he experienced as a child that would affect someone later in their life. And he's this rich billionaire character that, you know, put this guy away, that felt like he did wrong to his family, with one end goal in mind. And he says it, where he essentially just wants to share this one moment with Josh Brolin's character. And that's pretty much all I'll say. Now, I don't feel like the way that it is explained and some of the details they get into of why he does what he does, I feel like is very confusing. And a lot of that isn't explained well. But I feel like given some of the backstory that we get from this character and giving his goals, I would expect that person to be a little bit off and a little bit strange and a little bit weird. And so I liked it. I think that was where he was coming from. And for me, I think that's exactly how I would play it. So I liked it on that manner.
And just a quick note, to credit your point, this is based off a comic book or manga or whatever you want to call it. So, I guess maybe this could be more true to the material than the actual first movie. So you never know, you know, it is a cartoon, it is a comic book. So.
Yeah. And I've heard from some people that has read the manga that Spike Lee uses a combination of both the original film and some of the source material. But I haven't read it, so I don't know. I'm just kind of going off of the word. That's just what some people have said to me.
Yeah, taking that into consideration, I mean, I guess it kind of does make sense. I'd imagine somebody that's gone through that would be a bit weird later in life. But that's not the only thing. And maybe taking the whole manga thing in here, that could explain a lot of the way that some of the film is shot, even going back to the hammer scene.
It does feel a little comic booky.
Yeah,
it really does. Yeah,
Samuel L. Jackson's character is very comic booky to me as well, just at least in his presentation anyway.
I love him though. He
was great.
Whenever he does stuff like this,
he was great. And I'm glad that they got plenty of profanity in there for him too, because it wouldn't feel the same otherwise.
Exactly.
I'm not paying $9 for a Capital One commercial.
Yeah, exactly. And I want to see more Samuel L. Jackson roles like this. He loves to do it, and I think there's a lot of movies out there like it, and I could watch it all day long.
Oh, well, you can make that kind of money just for doing, like, you know, 5-minute cameos, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
I know, because he's not in the film a whole lot. But
every movie, he should have been in 12 Years a Slave.
Hey, we got him in Django.
Definitely. Oh, that was the best part about Django to me, too. I love that.
What do you think about that, Scott?
I really liked him, too. I like seeing him get away from Marvel's universe for a little bit. You know, it's nice to see him back to being normal again.
And I think that's what I liked about it, because I feel like I've been so exposed to the Marvel Sam Jackson, you know, with rewatches and all the new stuff that's coming out. So it felt good to get back to, that's the Samuel L. Jackson that I know.
Yeah.
I'm familiar with that guy. Absolutely. Okay, well, there's a lot more we could talk about, but any final thoughts, and what grade would you guys give Spike Lee's Old Boy?
I don't really know what I have to touch on as far as final thoughts go, but as far as a grade on that, I would give it a C. I mean, it's not terrible. It could be a fun watch at some points here. I mean, for certain parts of it, I don't really know how to fully take myself out of the shoes of somebody who's seen it before and watch it like that. But I think that if I did, I would be so confused and I wouldn't really thoroughly enjoy it. There would be parts that were fun to it, parts, you know, if you like action movies, there's plenty of that kind of stuff in there as well. But I don't know. Maybe I'm just being too judgmental at this point here, but I wasn't a huge fan of it.
No, I think you're pretty spot on. I when I came out of the theater, I thought a little more of it than I do now, just because I've thought about it a little more and we've talked about it more. But I think, you know, it's hard to remake something in general and make it as good as it was the first time or whatever. But, you know, it seemed like Spike Lee just really didn't know what to do with this, and maybe stuff got edited out or whatever. We'll give him the benefit of the doubt there. But I did like Elizabeth Olsen a whole lot, and I did like the other cast, the other casting done here. So I gave it a C+. So that's my final grade on that. What about you, JD?
I 100% agree with everything you guys said. I mean, there's a lot to this movie that just really fell flat, and I would like to see a director's cut of this. And that might not necessarily make it a ton greater, but I think there's potential for the movie to be much greater given that director's cut. So that's kind of where I sit with it. I kind of mentioned this earlier, but one of the bigger things that we didn't really go into a lot that was disappointing to me was the score, which I really, really liked from the original one. And Roque Baños, who did the score here, to me, it was awful. It just didn't add any value to the film at all. Which was a little bit disappointing, but you know, overall it was just rushed and underdeveloped, and we just needed to see more material, and that's mostly where the studios failed by butchering the editing. And so I give it a C+ as well. I'm right there with you guys. But anyway, be sure to go check out a full review of this is up on the website right now that I did just a few days ago. We also have a video review of this from John from Second Rate Report. Both of those reviews are up on our site at incessionfilm.com.
If you agree or disagree with our takes, let us know by leaving a comment on our Facebook page at facebook.com/incessionfilm or tweet us at incessionfilm. You can leave us a comment on our Google Plus page or on Letterboxd. Our usernames on both of those are incessionfilm, and you can also email us at incessionfilm@gmail.com. We love the questions, so keep them coming.
All right, the Incession Film Top 3 is next, and we're going to be discussing our top 3 unnecessary movie remakes. However, this list is very necessary, so be sure to pay attention. We'll break it all down next. We'll be right back. The Incession Film Top 3 is brought to you by the First Time Watchers podcast, which is an awesome podcast I would recommend. It's hosted by Walter, Tim, and Hermano. And what is great about this podcast is a couple different things. I've mentioned this on the show before. I'll mention it again. I love this podcast because each of these guys go into a review, have never seen it before, and so they come in with awesome, fresh perspectives. They have really great banter back and forth. Their dynamics are really great. They talk about new films. They talk about older films. Anything and everything in between. If they haven't seen it, they watch it and review it together. It's really great. It's a podcast I would highly, highly recommend. Again, it's the First Time Watchers podcast. You can find out more information at firsttimewatchers.blogspot.com. You can also just go to iTunes and search First Time Watchers. follow them on Twitter at First Time Watchers. But definitely check them out. These guys are really great. I really like their podcast. They're fantastic. So please, please do me a favor. Go check them out. Rate them on iTunes and subscribe. I promise you, you will not regret it. You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 41, and now we're going to be going over our top three unnecessary movie remakes. So that being said, before we get into it, fellas, did you have any criteria to pick your list this week?
Well, not only unnecessary remakes, but how bad the remake was or how much it totally changed the original for me anyway.
Okay.
Sometimes it may be not unnecessary. I mean, a new version isn't always a bad thing, but changing the source material and certain things. I don't know. I'm kind of a homer when it comes to that kind of thing there. I don't like remakes in general for the most part. That's just me though.
So I'm going to go out on a limb here and make a generalization, which I usually do not do. I'm going to say that any foreign film remade is not unnecessary. So that pretty much takes all foreign films out for me. And I am pretty open-minded when it comes to remakes, but I do think there are a lot of unnecessary ones. So I was able to find a lot, just unnecessary, meaning that the first one is still good enough today to hold up. That was my main criteria. So what about you, JD?
The main thing for me that I wanted to consider is that to me, unnecessary does not equal bad. Even if it was a decent remake, a good example that's not on my list would be Carrie from earlier this year. I didn't mind Carrie. I thought it was fine. I didn't have any problem with it. I didn't think it was bad, but I thought it was completely unnecessary. We didn't need to have it. Right. The original one is fantastic. Didn't need to be done. So sort of along those veins is where I'm at. I just wanted something that was my top three were just three that just didn't need to be done, whether they were good or bad. And I did kind of consider foreign films as part of mine with some exceptions, but that's more or less where I was. All right. That being said, Blake, what is your number three?
Well, my number three is a little bit silly to an extent here, but I think, again, we're talking about unnecessary as in the original still holds up. It doesn't need to be remade. It's not a great classic here, but the Pink Panther series.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Peter Sellers was absolutely perfect with everything that he did with his style, back at that point. I love Steve Martin, don't get me wrong, but there's absolutely no reason to make a new version of that with, all the other. It just seemed like a B movie version of it as well. And it really just, to me, bastardized the original movies. And I love those old comedies like that. So I think there was absolutely no reason to do that. And plus, it just was terrible at the same time.
Yeah, great pick.
Yeah, that is a good pick. I actually considered that as well. All right, Scott, what is your number three?
My number three is one that I kind of cherish as an old horror film, and that is The Omen. They remade it in 2006, and I think they just called it Omen. I'm not sure. I didn't see it, but I just felt that it was so unnecessary that, I don't plan on ever seeing it, because this is something that you can watch today, the original, that's still really good and really kind of scary. So I don't know. It just felt completely unnecessary to me.
What year was the remake of that again?
2006.
I actually haven't seen the original. I've only seen the remake of it. So, have you seen the original?
You poor soul. Yeah, the original was great, and there was no way that Liev Schreiber and Julia Stiles were going to match up to that.
No.
I have to go back and check it out then.
Yeah, Gregory Peck's really good in it. That's one performance. It's the equivalent of trying to remake The Exorcist if they tried to remake that. It's that level of a film for me anyway. So, yeah, that was my number three. What about your number three, JD?
All right, for my number three, I actually went with the movie we just talked about, Old Boy. And the big reason I wanted this on my list is because I am a big fan of the original. And I know Americans have a really hard time watching foreign films, that sometimes have a hard time with subtitles and things like that. But to me, that's just lazy, you know, movie watching. The original is so good. And it's a movie that, yes, it's dark and depressing, but it also has some fun elements to it. It's a crazy story. And I think it's one that Americans could still watch and enjoy. And I understand why they wanted to do it. But to me, it's kind of in the same vein of what I thought about Carrie this last year, where you can make a decent remake, but it's not going to match the original. It's clear that this one didn't anyway. There wasn't a whole lot new. And as a big a fan as I am for the original, I just didn't necessarily care for what they were doing with it, with this new one. So for me, that's why I had to put it on here. I just didn't think that we needed to, especially since we're only 10 years out from the original. It was only 2003. Go watch the original. It's much better than this, at least the piece of crap we saw out in theaters anyway. Maybe the director's cut's better. Who knows? But what I saw, I didn't care for. So go watch the original. Don't be lazy. And I promise you'll probably enjoy it much better.
Right. That's very fair. Just to remind the listeners out there that if you have a Netflix subscription right now, that's actually on there available for streaming. So definitely check that out.
It is a dubbed version, though. Yeah. So be aware of that. Mm-hmm. If you can find the original one with just subtitles, I would recommend that. But yeah, it is on Netflix, and in case you do want to watch it.
Right. Moving down the list on here, I've got a few honorable mentions to go afterwards here. I had a lot that I just really hate here. But number two on my list is the I forget what year it was. I know it was in the mid-90s, but the remake of Psycho with Vince Vaughn and Anne Heche.
Yeah.
There is no need for, like you were talking about The Exorcist a minute ago there. There is absolutely no reason for that movie or any movie like that to ever need to be remade. That will always be classic. It's like if they're going to make, you know, there's somebody to remake Gone with the Wind or something like that. You know, it's to me, that's for me is the kind of film fan I am. But how dare you? And especially to put somebody like Vince Vaughn in that role, who I know at that point in his career wasn't the huge comedic actor that he is now, but he certainly wasn't Norman Bates at the same time. You know,
it's funny now to look back and go, was that character?
Oh, yeah. Well, I was looking up online and looked at like the poster and a couple of still shots from it. And I'm like, Vince Vaughn has never made a serious face like that in the last like 12 years. So
for sure.
They really bothered me.
Yeah, that is a great choice. That is a very, very good choice.
Yeah, for sure.
All right, Scott, what is your number two?
My number two is actually the remake ended up being a really good movie, but I didn't feel like it was necessary, so I included it on my list, and that is 3:10 to Yuma.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
This is, you know, a Western that is from the 50s that was really, really good, and it still holds up today really well. It's a good representation of the old Western genre, and the new one is actually really, really good too. So, you know, I just wanted to put something on there that, you know, was very unnecessary, but it did work out. So,
yeah.
You know,
so, this
always a bad thing.
Yeah. This is a great example of what would fit my list if I was going to put it on here that was good, but maybe wasn't 100% necessary. But, like, I mean, I thought the new remake, though, was really good as well. Absolutely.
Really good. Really good.
Yeah. 100% agree with that. For my number two, I went with the 2011 movie, The Thing, the remake of the remake, which was 1,000% unnecessary. Mm-hmm. This is a movie that stars Mary Elizabeth Winstead and Joel Edgerton, and it had some elements that was okay. In fact, I actually really liked the poster art for this movie and for this version of it.
Yeah.
Thought it was really good, but the remake, the 1982 John Carpenter remake, was very good, and I really enjoyed that film. Mm-hmm. This one was 1,000% unnecessary. If you want to watch the original remake, I would highly recommend that. But this one, I understand it's, you know, what, almost 30 years after the fact, but we still don't need it.
Right.
I mean, I totally agree.
John Carpenter's version works just as well, and we don't need to rehash it again and again. Let it go. Just let those two movies that we have out there be the ones that people want to see. This, to me, was a waste of time and money.
Yeah, that's a good pick.
All right. What is your number one, Blake?
Well, my number one, and as a director, I don't always dislike this person, but he basically ruined my childhood. And I'm talking about Tim Burton's remake of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory.
Mr. Wonka, I'm Violet Beauregard.
Oh,
I don't care.
Well, you should care, because I'm the girl who's going to win the special prize at the end.
Well, you do seem confident, and confidence is key.
I'm Veruca Salt. It's very nice to meet you, sir.
I always thought a Veruca was a type of wart you got on the bottom of your foot.
Ooh, yeah, very good.
That is a great pick.
And again, maybe it's me being an adult now and how much I loved the original movie with Gene Wilder back in the day, but it, number one, was completely unnecessary because that movie still, again, to me, is one of my all-time favorite classic movies, sure. You know, from my childhood and everything. But to completely take that character and do a complete 180 on him, to me anyway, some later scenes in the original movie, he loved children, and that was the whole point there. And then just to turn him into a creepy, I'm sorry, it's just another excuse to put Johnny Depp in white makeup.
That's pretty much all it is.
You know, it's just like, it just bothered me so much. And I own the movie. I bought it, you know, and I tried to like it because sometimes when there's a movie like that that's a remake of something that I loved so much as a child, I want to give it benefit of the doubt. I really do. But it was, when I look back on it, and Tim Burton did it again. It was a tie between this and Alice in Wonderland.
Oh,
yeah,
for
that's
me.
Another good one.
Because that was, and again, but that one, it wasn't Alice in Wonderland. That was Through the Looking Glass. That was the sequel. People totally forgot about that. Yeah. That was totally the sequel to Alice in Wonderland, but it was just titled differently. Thank you, Disney. But again, another just, you know, Tim Burton is a creepy guy. Why is he making movies for Disney? That point, to me, and I'm sorry, it just doesn't work for me, and I hated it, and like I said, it totally ruined my childhood. So,
I like the passion.
No,
yeah,
that's great.
I'm very passionate about these kind of things. I would fist fight Tim Burton over that movie.
we'll set that up.
Yeah, let's do it.
I think, though, there's going to be a big line for that. So after some of these last remakes. Okay, Scott, what is your number one?
Well, my number one, I could talk about this for an hour. I could write a book on this, and Blake had it as his number two, and that would be Psycho.
It's sad when a mother has to speak the words that condemn her own son, but I couldn't allow them to believe that I would commit murder. They'll put him away now, as I should have years ago. He was always bad. And in the end, he intended to tell them that I killed those girls and that man, as if I could do anything except just...
There are just certain things you don't do in the world of cinema, in the world of film. And, you know, remaking Psycho is one of them. It's one of them.
Yeah.
I'm very cautious to put like a precious title on something. And I generally am for people doing whatever they want, but you cannot remake something as big as Psycho, not just because it's popular, because it changed cinema. You know, it's a great, it still holds up, great performances, a Hitchcock film. So, you know, Psycho to me, and the trailer for this is just about like a Mad TV sketch or something. Vince Vaughn just looks hilarious. I mean, it's so bad, and the movie is so bad, and he tries to do scene for scene remakes, and it's just awful. I mean, it's one of the worst things ever, and I feel like it's the most necessary remake ever made for me anyway. So that was my number one.
So this is a first time, Scott, first time that you and I – are sharing a number one.
So, nice.
I know. This never happened. Never happened before. So, but I 1,000% agree with you, which is exactly why it's my number one.
Yeah. Well, it was raining that night and her hair was all wet. And I'll tell you, it's not a very good picture of her either.
No, I guess not.
At all.
I guess not.
Uh-uh.
Tell me all about her.
Well, she arrived rather late one night and went to sleep and left early in the morning.
How early?
Very early.
Which morning was this?
The next day, so Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Did anyone meet her here?
Uh-uh.
Did she arrive with anyone?
Nope.
Did she make any phone calls or... Locally?
Uh-uh.
Would you spend the night with her?
No.
Well, then how do you know she didn't make any phone calls?
Well, we, well, she was very tired and... I'm starting to remember it now. I'm making a mental picture of it in my mind. Do you know how you do that? How you make a mental picturization of something in your mind?
Everything about this is a joke. And there's certain movies you just don't need to touch. And even if you make a decent version of this, you don't necessarily need to remake it. I don't think this is a decent version. I didn't really care for this at all. I mean, kind of like what I was saying to you, it's hard to even fathom that Vince Vaughn was even in this movie to begin with. But everything about this remake is a joke. And it really is a punchline to a lot of different jokes that we've heard over the last decade or so, especially when you look back at some of these guys' career choices. But it's not necessary. The first one is amazing. It's a classic for a reason. And especially if you're going to do shot-for-shot remake, it's pointless. Like, if people in 1998 wanted to see Psycho, go watch the Hitchcock film. We don't need a new one.
Right.
And especially the way that they did it, it was almost offensive. Mm. You know what I mean? Like, it really is. So it's like, especially to film fans, I mean, it's hard to even fathom. But
the shower scene was so bad, too. I mean, it was unbelievably bad. Anyway,
no one's going to buy Vince Vaughn as that character.
No.
So even I understand he wasn't as familiar back then, but still, it's hard to buy into what he's doing.
And why in the world was Gus Van Sant, who, by the way, is from Louisville, Kentucky, so another movie, one of the worst movies of all time, is from a Kentucky director. I'm speaking of Birth of a Nation, is the other one from Louisville. Oh. So these Louisville directors, you know, as a UK fan, I'm pretty happy with them, you know, failing so much. But anyway, man.
Yeah, Hitchcock, though, don't watch the 98 version. Oh, in fact, they should just erase it from history altogether. Yeah.
I don't want anybody to ever see that before they see the old one.
Exactly. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. All right. Now, Blake, I know you definitely had some honorable mentions, so let's go over some of our honorable mentions this week.
Okay. I had a couple here, and they were, I guess, timing-wise, it made sense for them to maybe want to do some remakes, but still unnecessary to me. Two of them I wasn't huge fans of to begin with, but completely unnecessary, was Footloose.
Yeah.
And Red Dawn. Were two. I think Red Dawn was just awful. That was just the whole North Korea thing going on. They wanted to just get all political and stuff like that. But I think any horror franchise. I think that in the last few years we've had remakes: Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Halloween. These are classic characters, and I like old horror stuff as well. I love those because those are the kind of horror movies where you actually rooted for the bad guy a little bit there. You know, you wanted to see some stuff like that. You know, as you know, a younger film fan in that way, but. They ruined every bit of it. Like Rob Zombie completely destroyed Halloween. Michael Bay completely destroyed Friday the 13th. And then I don't even want to talk about the Nightmare on Elm Street with Jackie Earle Haley. Was just really awful to me. So I think there's with those kind of things there. And Texas Chainsaw Massacre also, which they've remade, I think, a dozen times.
I know. I can't even keep up with all the horror remakes.
More reboots than anything else ever. I mean, there was like the one that had Jessica Biel in it back in the early 2000s, and there was another one, and there's another one that came out last year. There was the one in the 90s that had, who was it? It might have been Matthew McConaughey or somebody like that was in a really, it was like, I was on a VHS release here, I think, only, but it was something just terrible. And that's stuff that just really has no reason to be done.
Yeah, 100% agree. What about you, Scott? What do you have?
Basically, you guys have hit on all mine. I definitely thought Willy Wonka did not need to be remade, Alice in Wonderland. And I also want to say that the Wizard of Oz thing that came out this year, I haven't seen it yet. I understand it's okay or whatever, but I just felt like they were – it's not a remake, I understand, but it's kind of a – I don't know. I kind of felt it unnecessary to bring that out of the, you know, bring that out of the dead or whatever, drag that up from the ground or whatever you want to say about it.
Yeah. I really liked it. And yeah, it definitely serves more of a prequel than a remake, but I can understand how hardcore fans would feel that way. I actually enjoyed it though for the most part.
Yeah, I need to see it. Maybe it'll change my mind. I just felt that trailer kind of, I don't know, turned me off. But and then Halloween, Friday the 13th, Night on Elm Street, all those are definitely on my unnecessary list. And one other thing I just wanted to say before I let you give us your honorable mention, JD, is that, you know, great directors like Tarantino and even Steve McQueen recently, you know, they talk about there's plenty of bad movies that you can remake. Why pick a really good movie? Why don't you pick a really bad movie? You know, that's what Tarantino kind of does. He steals from bad movies that could have been good or something like that. So I feel like, you know, it's just really silly to me that some of these things get remade because there's so much other stuff out there that you could be doing. So,
and there is, I think that's a good topic that we can use for another time to really debate of, you know, what qualifies or what you know, what criteria would you use to do another remake? Mm-hmm. I mean, because there's lots of movies out there that maybe could be updated that are decent, or maybe you just do bad movies, or, you know, a combination of both. I don't know. It's really interesting, though, as far as how they pick some of that. But yeah, that's,
it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
What are your honorable mentions, JD?
What I had The Day the Earth Stood Still, the 2008 movie, which might be the one that I hate the most in terms of movie remakes. Oh,
yeah. I saw that.
Did not like it at all. That's Keanu Reeves saving the world once again.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
So if you go back to last week's show.
really? How did we get him saving the world?
I don't know. I don't like it. Wicker Man with Nick Cage in 2006.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not the bees. Yeah. The Karate Kid that came out a few years ago. The Wolfman, which I think was 2008 or 9. And I also had on here Dinner for Schmucks, which I think is one of the more interesting ones I thought of, which is actually a remake of a French film called The Dinner Game. At least that's what it translated into. I couldn't even try to do the French name. But but the French version of it, which I think is a 98 film, I really liked. I saw it a long time ago, but I remember liking it. And then I hated the American remake of that. But so that was one I wanted to throw in there as well. But that's all I had.
I think we can take from this conversation that there have been a lot of unnecessary remakes.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. The list really could go on and on.
There's more and more and more.
Sure, yeah. We barely scratched the surface when it comes to that. Absolutely.
So let us know how your picks stack up against ours. You can email us at insessionfilm@gmail.com or leave us a comment on Facebook or Twitter on our website at insessionfilm.com.
Okay, just want to talk about the poll from our website from this last week where – in preparation for Frozen coming out this last weekend, which I will be seeing tomorrow and have heard really good things about, we asked, what's the best Disney studio animated film since 2000? So, because there's a lot of Disney movies, and we wanted to do just Disney studio films, so not Pixar or anything like that. And so we put on there for the choices were The Emperor's New Groove, Lilo and Stitch, Chicken Little, Treasure Planet, Bolt, Meet the Robinsons, Tangled, Wreck-It Ralph, or you could just write in your own. So those were the answers that we had. We didn't have as many answers, but it was pretty overwhelmingly in terms of the responses, with 55% going to Wreck-It Ralph, which was the obvious choice if you ask me. But I'll throw it to you guys. What's your favorite Disney?
I would definitely agree with that. Definitely Wreck-It Ralph there. Among the choices that we have available anyway. I've kind of had a few things against Disney in the last few years myself anyway, but I did really enjoy that film. I like the casting of the voice actors in it here. I thought John C. Reilly was just perfect in that. So
yeah,
I was a big fan of it. I mean, I would watch it over and over.
That movie got screwed out of an Oscar last year. Mm-hmm. What'd you think about that poll question there, Scott?
I definitely would have answered Wreck-It Ralph, although I will say Tangled was really well done as far as the Rapunzel story goes and stuff. So those two are definitely my better.
Yeah, Lilo and Stitch did get 27% of the vote, and then Tangled was in third with 18% of the vote. And I did like Tangled too. Wreck-It Ralph, though, just blows it away. To me, I know it's kind of fresh, but to me it is probably my favorite Disney film ever.
Wow.
Like, I know. I loved it. Now, again, it's maybe over time I have to go back and because I did love The Lion King. Mm-hmm. That's right up there as well. But I loved Wreck-It Ralph. I mean, I fell in love with that movie. It was the music and everything about it. I just fell in love with it. It was fantastic. But
wouldn't you say that Wreck-It Ralph is kind of like the Toy Story for our generation, and that we actually played with the toys in Wreck-It Ralph as opposed to
makes sense. Yeah, a lot of like video game references and all that sort of stuff. Yeah, and you know, and especially in the digital stuff, you know, yeah, it was really cool. I loved it. And I'll say, if Frozen is as good as what I'm reading online and what people have been telling me, and giving how good Wreck-It Ralph was last year, it really sounds like Disney is on an upswing, while Pixar is kind of falling off the map, it looks like, comparatively to where they have been in the past anyway.
Also, did you guys hear about that Mickey Mouse short in front of Frozen?
I have heard about that, yeah.
It's supposed to be pretty good, so I'm anxious to see that more, honestly, more than the Frozen.
I know, I've heard I think that's going up for an Oscar too. I think they submitted that to be for an Oscar as well, short. Anyway, also just want to say a quick thank you to those supporting the show. If you want to support us, just go to the website at insessionfilm.com. And on our main menu, we have a premium tab that you can click and get any of our awesome bonus content. And you can get that for just a small donation of 99 cents. So thanks to everyone that is supporting us.
And next we'll be discussing the Independent Spirit Awards, which movies were deserving of the nominations, which ones were snubbed. We'll break it all down next.
Consequence against you, a weak defense, then there's me. I'm 17, looking for a fight. All my life, I was never there, I'm just a ghost, running scared. Here our dreams are made, the one. Lost in the city of angels, down in the comfort of strangers, I found myself in the fire-burned hills and the land of a billion lights.
You're listening to the Incession Film Podcast. This is episode 41. And now we're going to be going over something a little bit fun. And I know Scott and I have talked on this show quite a bit about how much we've loved some of the independent movies that's coming out this last year. And there's been some really good ones. And so this last week, the Independent Spirit Award nominees were listed and they were announced. And before we get into some of the bigger categories here, I just wanted to kind of get some of your overall general thoughts and what'd you think of some of these nominees?
Well, there's a lot of things on there that I've actually not had a chance to see this year. A couple that I am aware of on here, of course, All Is Lost, I've heard nothing but amazing things about. And the last time I was on, we spent way too much time talking about 12 Years a Slave.
That's true.
So, I mean, I'm being to be a bit biased, but I mean, I can't, that was one of the best films I've seen in years and years, so I can't imagine it not really cleaning up a lot. I'm interested to see James Gandolfini's nomination for a posthumous award. I would love to see that as well, just for, you know, for that sake anyway alone. But you know, I'm a little bit, you know, behind on some of this stuff here, so I don't know as much about what's going on as you guys do on some of these. But I'm still, you know, excited to see what turns out from it, and hopefully we get, you know, a bigger turnout from some of these films, you know, moving forward.
Yeah, we'll have to get you caught up, because most of these that are on here are fantastic. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic. All right, Scott, any general thoughts on this before we get into it?
Well, I think that one of the first things that popped out to me was that Before Midnight got some love here. Julie Delpy, you know, getting some love, as well as those guys for the screenplay. So that was the first thing that I was kind of excited about. And otherwise, I just thought that it was really interesting, some of the things that got left off this list as well as got put on these lists. So, I think it's a cool awards show in that, you know, you do get a lot of the smaller things that would never get mentioned at the Oscars in here. So, yeah. I like that a lot. What about you? What's your general thoughts?
Yeah, I love it that we get to discuss and go over some of the best movies of the year. Like you're saying, that may or probably the Oscars and some of these bigger awards won't ever consider or look at. And so I love that we get to talk and go over some of these and you know, hopefully some of these films, you know, we'll get some good recognition that they really deserve. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens with this, and I'm looking forward to discussing it. Okay, well, let's get into it. And Scott, I guess I'll jump to you first, and we'll just stick to some of the bigger ones because we won't have time to go into all of these. But for the feature category for best feature, we have 12 Years a Slave, All Is Lost, Frances Ha, Inside Llewyn Davis, and Nebraska. I don't know about you, Scott. Well, I don't think you've seen Nebraska yet. That's on our list to see sometime soon. And Inside Llewyn Davis, we haven't seen yet either. Seeing 12 Years a Slave, All Is Lost, and Frances Ha, what do you think about these features? And is there any that you don't like here, or is there something else that you wish that was here?
Well, you know, I think this is really a nice list because I do think it captures the spirit of independent film and that, you know, you get some really low budget, brave things. And that, I mean, think about All Is Lost. We got a one man cast, you know, Frances Ha, you got a black and white movie. And, you know, 12 years, of course, I mean, that's not so much independent as the other ones, but it still is Steve McQueen and doing something pretty controversial. So I think you get this, you know, I think it's a really good list. I'm anxious to see these other two. I think Inside Llewyn Davis will be one of my favorites of the year. So I think this is a great, you know, list. What about you? What did you think about those?
Well, I've heard really good things about Nebraska, which is another black and white film, and I've heard that it's really good, and it's something I really wanted to check out. I mean, the trailers for it have definitely intrigued me. Same thing with Inside Llewyn Davis. I mean, everything that I've read, everything that I've seen has only made me excited for that. I'd say out of all of these, Frances Ha, which has gotten a lot of love, is probably my least favorite. I had some issues with some of that movie. So if I was going to replace one, I'd say that'd be it. Before Midnight is one of my top films of the year altogether, let alone any independent film or anything like that. So
how you don't put that in there, I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know either. So that's probably the one that I would replace. And again, I haven't seen Nebraska or Inside Llewyn Davis. I imagine both of those qualify and definitely deserve to be there. But, you know, Before Midnight for me, it's definitely one of my favorites. So I personally probably would have replaced that in there somewhere.
For independent film especially, I feel like it's more of a representation of independent than 12 Years is. So I would have given it the award, actually, if it was me. I mean, I haven't not seen the other two.
Sure.
Before Midnight's very much in the spirit.
Absolutely. Okay, well, let's move on to the director. Here we have Shane Carruth for Upstream Color. We have J.C. Chandor for All Is Lost, Steve McQueen for 12 Years a Slave, Jeff Nichols for Mud, and Alexander Payne for Nebraska. What do you think about these nominees?
I love that Shane Carruth is on there because Upstream Color, you know, it's one of the events of independent cinema this year that you just can't miss.
Yeah.
And I was really happy with that. And also happy to see Jeff Nichols on there because he really is making some great movies and he needs more recognition and more money for budgets and things like that.
Sure.
So, what about you? What'd you think?
I loved Upstream Color, but I cannot tell you anything that it's about. I have no idea what happened.
Yeah.
And it's really funny because Nate and I did an extra film on this a long time ago, and our discussion of it was pretty brief and pretty simple. Like, here's what happened, I think.
I think that's one of the best things about it is that you can take it one way or the other. You know, there's so many elements that you could take it far in one direction and not even talk about the other. So it's an interesting movie.
And it's really great because, you know, he's the director, but he's pretty much everything else. He pretty much did the whole thing himself, which is really impressive. And to have that many roles and to be able to lead yourself and be able to do it at the level that he did is really impressive. So, I definitely would highly consider it if it was me. We talked about J.C. Chandor quite a bit for All Is Lost. Again, sort of the same thing. You know, there was some more people involved for that one, I think. But, you know, for him, it's basically just him and Robert Redford, and they made one heck of a movie. And it's hard to consider Steve McQueen as well. We touched on that as during that show. And Jeff Nichols, Mud, it's still one of my favorites. I've loved what Matthew McConaughey's been doing lately. And I loved this movie. I thought it was very, very good. So
And for those people who say that things, you know, good things don't come out the first half of the year, these movies came out pretty early. Mud and Upstream Color.
Absolutely. Yeah. And again, I haven't seen Nebraska. I've heard good things, though, and heard that it's directed really well. But I love these nominees, and I love that Carruth, Nichols, and Chandor especially got some love there. Okay, briefly, we won't go into screenplay a ton, but did you have any general thoughts on the nominees for Best Screenplay?
Definitely want Linklater to get this one, you know. Definitely. I love Blue Jasmine and I love Woody Allen, but he's had enough awards and I really want Delphi Hall.
He's won enough.
Yeah, he's gotten enough. So I did like seeing Spectacular Now get on there though. You know, we like that one.
You know, I was just about to say that I love how the Spectacular Now was getting some love there. I really liked that film quite a bit. I didn't see Enough Said like you did, but I know you loved it.
You
critics seem
that.
To love it. Yeah. So I can't wait to get my hands on that one. But I do love Blue Jasmine, but I agree with you. And I love to see anything Before Midnight being nominated, I'm on board for. So
I'm really hoping it gets an Oscar nom, but I don't know. We'll see. I'm glad it was featured here.
Okay, well, let's move down to female lead. We have Cate Blanchett for Blue Jasmine, Julie Delpy for Before Midnight, Gabby Hoffman for Crystal Fairy, Brie Lawson for Short Term 12, and then Shailene Woodley for The Spectacular Now. Any thoughts on that?
I love this list because, you know, we definitely know that Brie Larson, Woodley, and Delpy, none of these people are going to get nominated for the Oscar. I do think Blanchett's locked up the Oscar at this point, so I wish that they would give it to Delpy, just because, like we said, we love Before Midnight, so
I agree.
Maybe they can get something.
I agree. Blanchett is definitely there for the Oscar. If she doesn't get it, it's very, very close. I'm not sure who else I'd give it to, though, at this point. But I love to see Brie Larson and Shailene Woodley on this list. I haven't seen Short Term 12, but I do like Brie Larson, and I've heard nothing but great things about
it. You would love it.
Yeah, but I fell in love with Shailene Woodley in The Spectacular Now, so I love to see her name here. And, of course, Julie Delpy is Julie Delpy, so absolutely love it. Okay, and then the last main one we just want to go over real fast is the male leads, which is Bruce Dern for Nebraska, Chiwetel Ejiofor for 12 Years, Oscar Isaac for Inside Llewyn Davis, Michael B. Jordan for Fruitvale Station, Matthew McConaughey for Dallas Buyers Club, and Robert Redford for All Is Lost. Good luck.
Yeah, this is a hard one.
Who the heck do you pick?
Yeah, this is, I mean, you know, I do think the Oscar is going to be between Ejiofor and Redford, but, you know, I don't know. It's so hard to leave anybody out because, you know, McConaughey did so well. We haven't seen Inside Llewyn Davis or Nebraska yet, so we still got to wait and see on those. But, man, these all are really deserving of recognition.
Yeah, and again, based off of what I've read, based off of the trailers we've seen, both Inside Llewyn Davis and Nebraska look fantastic. And the fact that those two movies are getting lots of nominations, I'm only more anxious and excited to see those films. I'm sure they're well-deserving. But even outside of that, I mean, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Michael B. Jordan, incredible in Fruitvale Station. Yeah. And I loved Matthew McConaughey in Dallas Buyers Club. I know I liked that movie more than you did, but I mean, the transformation he went through, he's almost unrecognizable and he just does a fantastic job, you know. And we've talked about Redford for All Is Lost, who I also think I literally have zero idea who I'd pick.
Don't you think it's pretty telling of male leads this year then that we have six people nominated here instead of the usual five?
Yeah. So. Well, we can't leave off.
we just got to put them all on.
Just put them all on. Just break the rules. Who cares? Okay, well, we don't have time to go into any of the other ones, but I'll just let you go off of, is there any other category or any other nomination that you just feel like you just really want to touch on?
You know, I wanted to say that I liked seeing Spring Breakers get the cinematography nod.
Yes.
I it deserves it, in my opinion. Computer Chess is apparently a really beautiful film, too. But in that same vein, I was disappointed that James Franco wasn't mentioned in Supporting Male.
I know.
Because I really think he could have fit in there. I don't think that those people – I saw Short Term 12.
There should be a write-in vote for Franco.
Yeah. I mean, I don't understand. Just because it's like a, you know – I don't know, nasty role or whatever you want to call it. I don't think he should be left off this list.
It was so good. Yeah, so good.
He's great. He's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. But other than that, I mean, it's pretty much what I expected. What about you?
I mean, like you're saying, I love that Spring Breakers is there as well. I like Fassbender being nominated for a supporting role here.
Yeah.
I'm sure he will for the Oscars as well. I didn't see it, but I really like James Gandolfini's name being here. I really want to see Enough Said, so I love that he's there. I also love Jared Leto. Man, his performance was absolutely incredible. I'd love to see him get an Oscar nod, too, for Best Supporting Role, because he was phenomenal.
Just touching on what you said there, too, let me tell you, I think Gandolfini is the clear best performance of these five, so you do need to see that Enough Said, because it is fantastic.
Absolutely. For these documentaries, there's a couple more that were left off here that I would like to see, but I'm not sure if they qualify as independent. But I will say The Act of Killing, which I did see a little while ago. I don't think we ever got a chance to talk about it on the podcast, but it's definitely something to watch. It is.
It just got named number one of the year by Sight and Sound, so it's huge press for that one.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me if it wins this one for sure. It's absolutely phenomenal. But yeah, I love these awards. I would maybe make a few changes, but for the most part, I mean, I think they're pretty spot on. I would, but since Before Midnight is one of my personal favorites of the year, I think it's absolutely incredible. I probably would have maybe put it in a couple of other areas, but for the most part, I thought it was very good. And I did think they get the female lead and the male leads. I do think they pretty much got that right on the nose.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Let us know your thoughts on the subject. Hit us up on Facebook, Twitter, or email us. We'd love to know your thoughts and who you think's going
to
win.
Yeah, absolutely. Would love to hear what you guys think about the Independent Spirit Awards. So definitely hit us up. And now we're going to finish off the show with some movie news and films we got to see over the last week. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Money's the motivation. Money's the conversation. You on vacation. We getting paid, so we on vacation. I did it for the fam. It's whatever we had to do. It's just who I am. It's the life I chose. Gunshots in the dark, one eye closed. And we got it cooking like a one-eyed stove. You can catch me kissing my girl with both eyes closed. Yeah. Perfecting my passion, thanks for asking. Couldn't slow down, so we had to crash it. You use plastic, we bout cash. I see some people ahead that we gon' pass, yeah. I never feared death.
You're listening to the In Session Film Podcast. This is episode 41. And before we get into films this last week, let's talk about some movie news. And in particular, there's really only one news item we're going to discuss this week. I'm sure all of you have heard by now, but unfortunately, there is a horrible tragedy over the weekend. And Paul Walker, the star from the Fast and Furious franchise, was unfortunately killed in a tragic car accident, and they are currently filming Fast 7 right now, so we have no idea what's going to happen with that, but I guess we don't really need to necessarily touch on the accident itself, but any overall thoughts on Paul Walker? I saw a lot of tweets over the weekend, and regardless whether people liked him or not as an actor, people tend to love him as a person, and he got a lot of love from fans and from other actors, which I thought was really great. What do you guys think about this horrible thing?
Yeah, there was definitely a lot of love poured out. You can see reading over a lot of the tweets from other people he worked with in the past, you know, going all the way back to the beginning of his career, and people that have even just worked with him once couldn't speak highly enough of him as a person. And no matter who you are, whether you like somebody as an actor or what they do for a living or not, it's a human being, and it's a terrible situation regardless. I've seen a handful of pretty rude things being said out there as well, and there's no need for any of that. And that kind of hurts me that people would do that in general for anybody's sake there. I mean, it's somebody's son, that's somebody's father, that's a person out there. I wasn't a huge Paul Walker fan. I got pretty tired myself of the whole Fast series. But still, there are things that he's done that I enjoyed, and again, like I said, it's a human being, and it's just a terrible thing to hear about, and I wish the most for his family, you know, after this situation here.
Yeah, well, you guys said it. I mean, it's a young guy that's passing away too early in a horrible accident. I mean, you can't say much more about that, but I do think it's worthy to talk about his work a little bit, you know, to respect him a little bit. And I want to say that I think that Joyride might have been one of my more favorite movies of my teenage years. So I really liked that a lot. And he was in that, of course. And, you know, the Fast and the Furious thing, you know, maybe they're not the most amazing movies, but I've enjoyed really all of them. And they are a cultural touchstone for cinema. So I really think that he, you know, has played an important role in the culture in the last 10, 15 years. Eight Below is also a good movie that he was in. I'm not sure if you guys have seen, but it was also very good. I mean, you know, he's a young guy. He's still probably had the best years ahead of him as far as acting goes. I could have seen him being one of these Matthew McConaughey guys, you know.
Sure.
Robert Downey Jr. is coming along acting pretty well in the future, but who knows? We'll never know. But, what about you, JD? Your thoughts?
He, regardless of whatever you think of him, I feel like he had tons of potential to be a really great actor, and Yeah, I mean, he kind of seemed sort of one-dimensional in some ways, but I've never minded him. I've always kind of liked him. He's never been distracting to me as an actor, and he's made the movies fun for me. I have always loved the dynamics he has with Vin Diesel in the Fast and Furious movies, and especially the last several ones have been phenomenal. And I did like the first one, and the fourth one wasn't too bad either. So I've enjoyed the moments that he's brought on screen, and I think he's brought some great moments on screen that we've all kind of seemed to enjoy. Going back to some of the other stuff that you were saying, Scott, 8 Below, I really enjoyed. That's another movie that would have made my top three heartbreaking scenes or movies. Yeah. Like, I had some hard times with some of the stuff going on there, but I thought he was absolutely fantastic. I also thought he was very good in Running Scared. Maybe even his best performance there, arguably. I think he's fantastic, and it's also a good movie. Joyride, as you were saying, is another good one. So, you know, he's been in some good stuff, regardless of whether you liked him or not. And he's never been, like I said, he's never been bad to me. You know, maybe not outstanding, but he was definitely never bad. And he definitely made the Fast and Furious movies at least fun.
We'd be wrong not to mention that he's probably one of the biggest heartthrobs of this generation of movie stars, far as the women go. They, you know, girls like this guy. So, as one-dimensional as he may be, he was very lovable.
And I also think it's worth noting that, you know, from what I've read online and stuff from this, you know, he seemed like he was a very generous guy. He seemed like he was a very nice guy. And he was actually on his way home from a charity event that he had thrown together when all of that happened. And obviously, who knows about the details and all of that? I don't think any of that's necessary. But, a lot of people have only said good things about him. And it's been very heartbreaking to see Vin Diesel react to this on social media, because he is devastated. I mean, he's tweeted out a few pictures and just said some really heartwarming stuff. And I think he's having a really hard time with it. So it's been kind of neat to see the acting community kind of come together and just really say some really nice things and be really loving and respectful in a time that's just really hard for him and his family, for sure.
Yeah, and you know, as far as these people who are trash talking him, and they trash talk all these celebrities when they pass away or whatever, saying they're not important or whatever, you know, I think when somebody passes away, what you say about them says more about you than it does about them.
Absolutely.
So, you know, keep that in mind when you're commenting on people's lives and things like that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely a horrible situation. The one other thing that I want to mention in this, and we don't really swear a whole lot on our podcast, but I think this is one of those moments that is absolutely worth it. TMZ can go to hell for all I care about. I don't know if you guys have followed any of this or not, but these assholes at TMZ are a fucking disgrace. And the reason I say that is because the way they handled this situation is beyond disrespectful. And over the weekend, once they released the reports or all this, they were essentially online and on Twitter high-fiving themselves about releasing this story. Mm-hmm. And just, it was all about them. And it was all about them just putting out this story and saying good job to one another. And it wasn't about a terrible situation. It wasn't about Paul Walker. It wasn't about him at all. It was only about them and them damn selfish people over there. And it's an absolute disgrace to media and news and to the internet. And I absolutely despise them. I think they're scumbags to begin with. And then the way they handle this is just an absolute disgrace. And I just had to get that off my chest.
Yeah, I
totally
agree.
Totally understandable.
It's worse than bad, you know. Like you said, they don't have the best reputation to begin with in the first place. But doing that, more congratulating themselves over breaking the story, you know, you don't see that if there's a car accident somewhere here in town. And you don't see people on the local news like high-five themselves about being the first on the scene to be able to break it.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. And there's no need for that. And again, I try to stay away from them, you know, period.
Oh, yeah, me too. So, yeah, so I apologize. I know we try to keep things PG-13 here, but I had to let that go because it was awful. I cannot believe that that's how they handled that. But anyway, if you have any thoughts, you know, let us know. It's obviously a pretty terrible thing. And our thoughts and prayers are definitely to his family and everyone involved.
for sure.
Okay, well, let's move on to films we got to see over the last week. Blake, did you get to see anything fun?
Well, a couple fun things. I'm going to pull up my list here. Of course, I did rewatch the original version of Old Boy, of course.
Nice.
Wanted to make sure and that I was ready for seeing the new version here to compare them. And in retrospect, maybe I shouldn't have, because maybe that made me a bit more judgmental and not just reviewing it as a movie as compared sure. to knowing, you know, what it is sure. going in. A couple things I got to watch throughout the week on here. And it's been years since I'd watched it. I watched The Doors, directed by Oliver Stone with Val Kilmer, Meg Ryan, and Kyle MacLachlan. I was a big Doors fan, so it was nice to go back and watch that. And I thought that Val Kilmer really did that role very well.
Nice.
I thought. I also watched Equilibrium. Went back and watched that again. A little old original Christian Bale stuff there with Tate Diggs as well.
Okay, hold on. I got to pause you right there.
Oh, God.
So, Scott, did you get to watch that this last week at all?
Not yet.
The guys that we had on the show last week were like, because this made one of the guys' top three. It was like his number one, I think. And he's like, you guys need to go back and watch it. It was like supposed to be like our homework assignment this week. But it was like bad in another movie. Yeah.
What category was that for? I mean, I liked it, but.
What was our top three last week? It was our top three movie dystopias.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it was kind of interesting.
I don't know. It's not exactly Mad Max as far as that goes, but. I liked it. It was good to kind of go back and see some of that earlier action stuff there. I get to watch another movie where Sean Bean dies in the first 5 minutes. You know, poor guy. why can't he get a break? I love Sean Bean. I'm sorry. And then, against my better judgment, a recommendation that was on my Netflix account was Killing Season with Robert De Niro and John Travolta. It sounded like a great idea at first, and I liked the premise of it, and you know, the description, everything like that. But once I got into it, and I finished it, but I absolutely hated it.
No.
There was nothing that was enjoyable about it. I know John Travolta is not really the greatest actor in the world, but the accent that he tried to use in that movie was just almost the worst thing I've ever heard in my life. And I know I get that. I'm like, you guys are really, you're sitting here and, you know, drinking a bottle of Jägermeister with your dinner and just like it's nothing, number one. It's hardly believable. The ending was terrible. The whole premise of it, once I got into it, you two are supposed to be from both veterans from the Bosnian War and you're, what, 30 years difference in age or something like that? I mean, how does that happen? Now, I did go back and had read that originally the character that De Niro played in that movie was offered to, I think, Nicolas Cage and Christian Bale both as well.
Oh, okay.
And they both backed out and probably to their advantage. So, they were supposed
go
to
go with De Niro then.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly. Yeah, definitely. When all else fails, go to De Niro, right? But it was supposed to be this big reuniting on stage of Travolta and Nick Cage.
Yeah.
Was their whole thing with it. And it would have been just as bad or worse because Nick Cage has not aged well as far as his acting goes.
Sure.
He's one of those that I used to love, but I cannot watch anymore. So that's pretty much all I got around to this week.
Very nice. Sounds like you were pretty busy.
Sounds like Netflix is not doing too well on Blake's
not on the recommendations. No, I get more out of love out of TV series on there than movies lately.
Sure. So. All right, Scott, what did you get to see?
Like last week, I have a lot here. I don't want to talk a ton about them, but first to get a couple out of the way, of course, we saw Old Boy, but Philomena, you know, I have a full review of that on InSessionFilm.com if you want to know what I think about that, you know, which I loved it. You can go read about it on there. Another one I got to see, which is probably one of the best movies I've watched this year, is Eyes Without a Face. Have you guys seen that?
Oh, I haven't, no.
It's like it's a 1960 or so horror film, and it's about a doctor who has a car wreck, and it like disfigures his daughter's face. So he tries to like repair her face by doing all this crazy stuff. And for the most part, the daughter has a mask on the whole time, which is actually the mask that inspired the what's the white Jason mask, I guess? Is that right? Jason that wears a white mask in the horror movies?
Yeah, it's a hockey mask.
Yeah. Well,
Mike Myers, okay. Right?
Well, that was a white mask. That was it was a William Shatner mask from Star Trek they painted white for Halloween. But
If white faceless, featureless mask, you know, inspired one of the, I don't know. Anyway, this movie is really, really a good horror film, and it's really creepy. And it has some really violent scenes, including a pack of dogs like actually attacking the actor who plays the doctor. So,
oh wow,
it's pretty insane. I mean, it's just a fun horror movie, which you did not expect to see from the '60s. So I really enjoyed that a lot. You know, another one I saw was Paths of Glory, which is by Stanley Kubrick, and it's his like World War I movie, which is really good. I don't know if you guys have seen that, but it's kind of about the French army, and they. You know, they started to get to the point where they were losing to the Germans so badly that their own soldiers wouldn't even fight. So they started executing their own soldiers, and it's kind of about that. And it's really good. Kirk Douglas is the star of that, and boy, Kubrick, man, he had really nice work here in the '60s. And another one I saw was Tokyo Story by Ozu. You know, it's like number one on the Sight and Sound list of all time. So I'd never seen it. Shame on me. It was really good. I mean, I'd really recommend it to anyone in the world because it's about like basically life and, you know, youth and old, old age, you know, everything. So you can't go wrong with Tokyo Story. I did rewatch Francis Ha and I liked it more this time than I did the first time. Maybe because I saw it on Blu-ray and the black and white shots are so amazing, you know, like easily the best cinematography this year, aside from Spring Breakers for me. This is right up there. And I did like Greta Gerwig a lot and Noah Baumbach. I think that's a good pair to, you know, a good director muse pair for the future. So, and they are dating, so they should be together for a while. Let's see. And also today I watched Frida, which is a Salma Hayek film where she is the she plays an artist from Mexico who is famous. I don't know. You kind of got to know the culture to really appreciate what this person is to Mexico and stuff like that. So it was kind of a personal piece for Salma Hayek, but she did get nominated for the Oscar, and it was an amazing visual spectacle as well as her role. I could not believe she transformed into this woman because she's not so attractive in this movie, so which is hard to do for Selma Hayek. Right, so
that sounds like a challenge.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not an amazing movie or anything, but it is worth one watch maybe if you like art history or something like that. I don't know. But that's finally all I got to see this week. What about you, JD?
I actually didn't get to see a whole lot this week. I kind of took a good week off of movie watching to spend a lot of time with family, really. So, because I was going to be away from my fiance for a while. So earlier in the week, I mostly just kind of spent time with her and then was back in Michigan just hanging out with family and didn't actually do a whole lot other than just, you know, take my sister to see Old Boy, which was an interesting journey, that's for sure, because my sister likes to talk a lot and respond to things as she's watching movies. Thankfully, there's only like six of us in the theater, but as things were unfolding, she was like, oh, no. Oh, no. It's just like, I'm like, you gotta calm down. We can talk about it afterwards.
What did she think about it?
She had no idea what was going on. She didn't really like it. And I kind of figured that was going to be the case. But she liked the premise of it and she thought that the story was interesting, but the twist and stuff she didn't really care for. And it was funny because the people behind us were the same thing. Like when that final twist happened, they're like, oh no. I was like, wow.
Are you serious?
But it was kind of interesting. So I was like, in some ways, I'm kind of glad they did do the American remake so that way I could see reactions like that.
Yeah.
Exactly.
So I guess it made that one moment worth it to me a little bit. but outside of that, the only other thing that I saw, this was a rewatch, which was Kubrick's 87 Full Metal Jacket.
Nice.
Which is a movie that I really like, and the first act of that film especially is something that is always entertaining to me no matter how many times I see it. But it also has a lot of depth to it, especially as it ends. So I really like that movie. It's not my favorite Kubrick film, but it's definitely one I still enjoy. Outside of that, the only other thing that I watched, and I did watch a lot of this, so I guess I did do a lot of viewing, but I started watching the TV show Arrow. And if you're not familiar with this, this is basically off of the DC comic book hero Green Arrow. And this TV show is everything that I want Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. to be. It is really, really good. The way that it teases the new episodes to the characters and the way they're written, it's 1,000 times better than Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. It is really, really good. I'm trying to like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. I'm trying to get on board with it. But this movie, or this TV show, excuse me, really blows it out of the water. I'm not sure if they'll ever do anything movie related with it. I think it'd be kind of interesting. But in terms of TV development, they're doing a phenomenal, phenomenal job. And what's interesting about this TV show is if you take away all of the superhero elements, it could be a great drama on its own, because you have a character who was stranded on an island for 5 years, who his family thinks he's dead. Then he comes back and he's alive and everyone's like, oh, great. And now his sister is like this drunk, high school drunk, who is trying to turn her life around. And his mom is someone who has lost her husband, thought that her son was dead. And she's now married to her ex-husband's business partner. And so there's like lots of drama going on there. And the main character was dating this girl, but was on the boat when the boat sank and he was stranded on the island. He was actually cheating on his girlfriend's sister at the time. So there's like all these like dramatic elements that are going on top of the superhero stuff. And there's more things that happen within an hour, within one episode of this show, than I feel like that's happened with the whole series of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. so far. Yeah. I mean, because there's so many dramatic elements, but none of it necessarily feels too contrived. There is some of that, but when you have a main character that was cheating on a girlfriend and he's gone for 5 years, everyone thinks he's dead, but now he's back. I mean, most of that kind of stuff feels very natural, given if those were the circumstances, that would probably happen.
Right.
And so, and there's a lot of other stuff that I won't get into just because it would take too much time. But, and then when you add in the superhero stuff, it's awesome. The action is great. The CG is easily the worst part of this. But you can expect that with, you know, because Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. CG isn't great either.
Right.
This
is even a smaller budget. It's yeah. It's like on the CW or something like that.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. So, yeah. Much smaller budget. So given what they have to work with, it's really, really good. And the ending to season one is very different than like the Hollywood formula. Mm. Very, very different. And so I loved it. I think it's very good. I just started season two. Which they're currently running right now. I think they're like 7 or 8 episodes in, so I'm going to try to get caught up on that soon. But this TV show is really good. If you like superhero stuff, I would recommend this one, hands down. It's very, very, very good. Everything about it is awesome, and it makes me just want to get out a bow and arrow and start learning how to use it. Not that I dress up in a hood or anything, but it just makes me want to become this guy. but it's great. It's done extremely well. I would highly, highly recommend it. But that's really all I got to see this last week. So be sure to like us on Facebook at facebook.com/InSessionFilm. Hit us up on Twitter at InSessionFilm. We're on Twitter a lot, so hit us up. I definitely would love to tweet you back and follow you. You can also hit us up on Google+ and on YouTube. Just search In Session Film for both of those. And sign up for our weekly newsletter. You can sign up on Facebook by clicking the newsletter tab or on our site at InSessionFilm.com/newsletter.
And all of our reviews are up on our website as well as on Letterboxd. So check us out at letterboxd.com/InSessionFilm. We try to respond to every piece of email we get. So email us at InSessionFilm@gmail.com. Be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes and on Stitcher. And while you're on iTunes, please leave us a review. We would greatly appreciate that. Also, check out our Listen Now page on our website at InSessionFilm.com/listen-now.
The In Session Film podcast is supported by awesome listeners like you. As I mentioned earlier, our premium podcast, which include our awesome weekly bonus content, which we will have this week with Old Boy. So be sure and go and check that out. But all of that goes directly into supporting the show, and it's available for just 99 cents. Again, just click on the premium tab on our website. to get one of those today. And thanks for everyone that is doing that. And you can hear everything that we do on our mobile app, which is just a one-time fee of $1.99. And you can get that app on the Amazon Market for Android devices and on the Podcast Box app for iOS devices. And all of those details are on the website at incessionfilm.com/apps. And that'll do it for this week's show. Blake, thanks again for coming on, man. Absolutely phenomenal.
Great job, man.
Well, thanks for having me on again here. And I'm excited that I got to be on here for something I was a bit more prepared for and a movie I was actually looking forward to seeing.
Sure.
I mean, looking back now, I'm kind of not... kind of wish maybe they wouldn't have remade in the first place and wouldn't have had to have seen it now. But, you know, it's a life experience.
We're just waiting for that director's cut.
Right. And honestly, I really am looking forward to that because I hope that makes me feel better about this.
Me too. Me too. Absolutely. But yeah, thanks for being on, man. We'll definitely have you on again sometime soon. Absolutely. Well, before we get out of here, fellas, any final thoughts on anything?
Nothing in particular on this. There's a lot of things coming out here in the next couple of months that I'm looking forward to seeing. Just in general, it's a great time to be a film fan right now. There's a lot of big stuff coming out right now I'm excited about. Most recently about Mandela. I'm a big fan of Idris Elba.
Cannot
wait to
see that.
I see like some extended trailers of that. I think that's going to shake up the whole best actor thing come Oscar
possibly,
time.
Yeah.
I would like to anyway.
That too,
normally, when you see historical characters like that on film, they're usually, most times, they stir things up a bit. It's kind of hard to make a historical-based film like that and not get in there with that. So that, I'm actually really excited to see Saving Mr. Banks with Tom Hanks playing Walt Disney. I think that's actually really a great story as well, so...
looks like it has some really fun elements to it.
I think so. Like just like in the line where that she doesn't want to go to Walt Disneyland. He's like, "You mean you don't want to go to Walt Disneyland with Walt Disney?"
No.
That's the only way to go.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Absolutely. All right, Scott. Any final thoughts on anything?
What we got? Out of the Furnace next week.
Out of the Furnace next week. Yeah. And according to Jeff Bridges, it's the best movie of all time.
Yeah, and apparently. Not a lot of people think that, but I'm going to. I'm going to go see it anyway.
I don't know, man. The dude abides.
For Jeff Bridges' sake, he, I guess I'll.
Right.
I just go ahead.
No, I mean, like Blake said, this is the best month to be a movie fan. These weekends coming up are going to be great. But I did want to mention, if anybody. Is looking for a good multi-zone Blu-ray player or DVD player, you can get them from Bombay Electronics on Amazon.com, and they're really good. I just got a worldwide one this week, and I'm able to play the Blu-rays from like China and Europe and stuff. So, it's really hard to pick a company to buy these from, so I did want to say that in case anybody out there is looking for one. Bombay Electronics is a good source for those. What about you, JD? Any final thoughts?
Well, I am looking forward to Out of the Furnace, and when we did our top three, fall films that we were looking forward to, this was my number one, but only because Jeff Bridges highly recommends it.
Yep.
So, I don't really know much about it. I've tried to stay away from the marketing as much as possible, quite honestly, but I have seen the trailer a couple times, and the performances look really good. So, a friend of mine on Twitter... compared it to Prisoners from earlier this year, so which I really liked, and that's probably more along the same vein as I expect it to be. Not the best movie of all time, but probably more in that area. I'm looking forward to it though nonetheless, and I'm looking forward to seeing Frozen and Philomena also this week, so I will be back into my movie watching groove this week as well as trying to get caught up on Arrow. So I'm really looking forward to it, so it should be a good week. No more football, so I don't have to worry about being stressed out every week. So, really looking forward to it. Anyway, be sure to go see Out of the Furnace this week. And if you get a chance to, try to go to YouTube and try to find Jeff Bridges talking about this movie. I promise you it's funny and it's worth your time. So it's hilarious. Anyway, go check that out, and we'll see you guys next time on the In Session Film Podcast.